So my name is Michio Honda, the postdoc at NetApp. This is joint work with our former intern, Kenichi, and our two colleagues, Doug Santry and Lars Eckert. So let me start from explaining the overview of this work quickly. So we address the problem with message-oriented communication over TCP. So this is pretty common for HTTP, Memcached, and CDNs because TCP is very useful as it provides reliable transport. So, but problem is, so conventional network stack like Linux doesn't perform well for this kind of workload. For example, Linux network stack can serve 1 kilobyte of messages only at 3.5 gigabps. So this is much lower than today's network capacity, which is 10 gigabit Ethernet, for example. So existing approach includes improving socket API by doing some quickly accepting new TCP connection and batching system calls, but they show very limited performance improvement. So the people started like taking a more radical approach of running everything in UDA space on top of DPDK or NetMap. So, but the problem is that they can't use state-of-the-art, feature-rich, actively maintained in kernel TCP IP. So this is actually a big problem because today's TCP is really, really complicated because of a lot of extensions. And they are further complicated by techniques to cope with middle boxes, okay? So today, maintaining and updating TCP is really, really hard and expensive. So we take new approach. So we continue to use TCP/IP in the kernel, but we combine new opportunity of dedicating a NIC, like OS bypass TCP or user space TCP. So it actually achieves comparable performance to user space TCP/IP, and in the rest of these talks, I'm going to explain how we arrived at these numbers. So this is let's start from background. So the message-oriented communication over TCP has three important characteristics. First, it has to serve a lot of clients, so it has a lot of concurrent TCP connection. And second, it extends a lot of small messages, like from some several bytes to kilobytes. And as a result, it sees very high packet rates, say millions of packets per second in 10 gigabit Ethernet. So the problem is message latency. So that as a result, it introduces tens to hundreds of microsecond latency. And before seeing how it happens, let's look at the typical server code. So basically, the typical server or application thread runs event loop based on epoch wait, for example. Like epoch wait fetches the new request or a new file ready file descriptor, and it processes ready file descriptors in turn by reading requests, generating response, and moving this response back to the kernel and network. So here, the important thing is two levels of queuing happens. So the first one is already in this code. So packet is processed one by one, so the rest of the file descriptors have to wait. So the another one is when this code is running, the newly arriving requests are queued in the kernel, so this is second level of queuing. So as a result, as expected, the more concurrent number of concurrent TCP connections we have, the more ready file descriptors are written by single epoch wait. And this experiment shows the exactly like that. So this return number of file descriptor means the n in this code. So this is exactly what we expect. So from here, what we further expect is as increasing number of the concurrent TCP connections, we have higher average and tail latencies. And the experiments also match our expectation. So now we saw this long message latency problem. So the next question is where we could improve in software stack. So in short, the protocol processing in TCP/IP is not that bad. because so the we run the very simple measurement, exchanging HTTP GET and OK, and the blue box means latency breakdown. So TCP/IP takes in total 1.48 microseconds. So this is not that bad in that entire 3.75 microseconds, because TCP/IP does a lot of things, like validating all the protocol headers and looking up TCP connections and the advancing a lot of internal state and so on. So, but the problematic part is like packet I/O. So it just moves packet from the NIC to the software, or but it takes 0.6 microseconds. Also, socket VFS, that layer is just the abstraction, but it takes significant time. So also that the end-to-end latency measured by client application is in this experiment, where it was 19.5 microseconds, and by dividing it by two half, because client also takes a similar code path, it's 9.75 microseconds. So the question is where the rest of 6 microseconds comes from. So we say that it's actually the minimum latency between two software over a network. So we validated that using NetMap-based ping-pong application, which is network stack bypass. So it reported 5.77 microseconds latency, so which reasonably fills that 6 microseconds of gap. But story is not even worse when we start handling many TCP connections. So that we found that when we have a lot of monitoring file descriptors, so the equal weight processing cost increases linearly. So when handling 100 descriptors, the latency goes up to 4 microseconds, which is pretty bad. So there's some takeaway. So conventional systems introduce end-to-end latency of tens to hundreds of microseconds. So, of course, this is basically the fast producer, slow consumer problem, and producer means a network or client, and consumer is network stack and application. So it is result of the processing delays. So also the socket API, read and write equal weight, comes at significant cost. So also packet I/O is also pretty expensive, given that their tasks. So, but on the other hand, TCP/IP protocol processing is not that bad. So far, our conclusion is we can use feature-rich, good TCP/IP implementation in the kernel, but we have to improve socket API and packet I/O. So now, of course, there is no free lunch, so we need some new opportunity, new opportunity to get performance. So we take an approach of dedicating a NIC to an application, because this is a pretty reasonable assumption today. Like, look at high-performance servers now. Basically, people allocate dedicated NIC for their main service and use another NIC for SSH or backup or that kind of things. So also, this assumption is similar to OS bypass approach, where they dedicate a NIC to run DBDK, and on top of that, they run high-performance service. But again, we want to use the TCP/IP in the kernel, so the question is that how we interconnect these three components, and that is StackMap. So we interconnect this component by NetMap. NetMap is the in-kernel framework that efficiently moves data between the NIC and kernel and user space. So how it works? It's like for StackMap application, it basically uses socket API for control, like creating socket, binding some namespace, which is something like some port number, and also listen. This is necessary because we have to create some TCP connection structure in the kernel, and we need isolation between regular application running on top of standard NIC, regular application running on top of the kernel network stack and using another NIC. But for data path, we use an extend NetMap API, and as a result, we can do system call and patching and packet I/O patching across multiple TCP connections, and zero copy and run to completion the model. So, but we have to also talk to TCP/IP in the kernel, so we allocate persistent the fixed size SK buff, or which is OS packet representation structure. So the, in this way, that we can, because allocating, deallocating the escape bus is really infamous to be expensive, so the, we can avoid most of the cost. So this is already done by NetMap, but the, for number four, we statically allocate packet buffers, also statically map DMA, because remapping DMA is also pretty expensive. So the, now let's look into the, how the API looks like from the transmission. This is pretty simple, but a bit different from the traditional socket API. So basically, the application sees a single ring, application thread sees single ring buffers, which has the 100 to 1,000 of fixed size packet buffers. Each of them is typically 2 kilobytes, but we can extend. So important thing is this ring buffer multiplexes multiple TCP connections. So the, when application put data from head to tail pointers, so the, it put it indicate file descriptor in addition to data to tell the kernel the, to which file, to which TCP connection the, this data go. So the, after that, the application calls system call, which is actually IO control or poll system call. And it the, then the network stack processes the packet, like putting a packet headers and send them to the network. So the RX is pretty similar. In this case, the kernel indicate file descriptor to, for each buffers, and the application can consume data from head to tail. But actually, the, this way of the consuming data is not very useful because remember that application sees application, typically EPOL-based application process the file descriptors, not chunk of data in packet arrival order. So the, to address that problem, so we allow application to traverse a ring by descriptors using additional data structure. So first, we introduce some the file descriptor arrays. So this is very similar to what EPOL wait returns. So we use another data structure, which is Scratchpad, which is actually a list of fast packet buffer for each file descriptor. Remember that file descriptor is the unique in each process, so this works. So also we introduce the next packet field and alongside each packet buffer. So as a result, we can traverse, we can the process specific file descriptor in this way, in red line. So now let's go into the result. So we implemented that in, we modified the Linux kernel and the NetMap, and we also created a new kernel module. So the setup is basically we use two machines logically connected back-to-back and using standard CPU and commodity 10 gigabit Ethernet NICs. So the server runs Linux for comparison or baseline and stack map. So the for client, we generate HTTP traffic using WRK benchmark tool and the memSRAP to generate memcached traffic. So let's start from very simple application, which is simple HTTP server. And the server serves 1 kilobyte of HTTP OK messages using single TCP core, using single CPU core. So the compared to Linux, which is redline, so the stack map achieves much lower latency. So the x-axis is the concurrent number of TCP connections, and the y-axis is latency in microsecond. So in both tail and average, so the stack map achieves much lower. And of course, we are not trading throughput with latency. So look at the bottom graph, so we see also the higher throughput. The what's happening inside here is basically in stack map case, the in each event processing cycle, much less TCP connections are processed. That's why we see the lower latency and high throughput. So now let's go into the bit more complex application, which is Memcached. So Memcached, the server serves 1 kilobyte of messages, and which consists of the 90% get and 10% set. Again, we use single CPU core, and for comparison, we use the one production quality, the TCP, user space TCP IP that runs on top of the Intel DBDK. So the interestingly, in both latency and throughput, and the stack map slightly outperformed the user space TCP IP. So that was even surprising to us, but that is pretty good. But so the final test, we increased the number of CPU cores and decreased message size to prevent links from being saturated. So the result is basically it similarly outperforms Linux, but start losing the user space TCP IP from 8 CPU cores. And so this is not only the problem with StackMap, but also problem with the Memcached itself. So if we use the standard simple HTTP server again, which resulted in the paper, and the StackMap performs slightly better, but still not perfect. So we are improving the multi-core scalability right now. So there's discussion. So what makes StackMap fast? So in terms of individual techniques, nothing is new, actually. So we borrow the techniques used by OS bypass TCP IPs, like run-to-completion, the static packet buffer, zero copy, and system call, I/O patching, new APIs. And limitation of future work is actually now it is possible that the misbehaving application modifies packet in TCP retransmission queue. So if application modifies, say, sequence number, the kernel or TCP IP might fall into the inconsistent state. So there's a list of related work, like kernel bypass TCP IP and socket API enhancement and improving OS stack using NetMap and improving network stack internals and running kernel code in user space. So here is the conclusion. So we address the problem with message-oriented communication over TCP. And the finding is kernel TCP IP is fast, but we have to improve socket API and packet I/O. So actually, we were able to bring most of techniques used by OS bypass approaches, and we got a lot of latency and throughput gains. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to take questions.
Hi, Sunny from George Washington University. This is a neat solution for the fast producer, slow consumer problem. But what are your thoughts on using DPDK that entirely bypasses OS, right?
So the DPDK was not our starting point because our primary motivation is I want to use TCP/IP in the kernel. But with DPDK, it runs everything in user space. So, for example, network interface abstraction, in Linux world, it's StructNet device, which is not visible from the kernel. So, combining this approach and DPDK is not trivial.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you know what exactly is different between running DPDK with the TCP/IP stack in user space in your approach, especially for the small messages, because I don't get why your solution is faster and DBDK is not. So what is the difference? What could it be? What does the speed difference?
The speed difference, I think one of the reasons the C-Star, our comparison, is one of their goals is the scalability to multiple CPU core. So I think they are optimized for scaling rather than the single transaction latency, I think.
So is it maybe that the stack takes more time for processing the message than Linux, for instance?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But it scales better.
Okay.
Dan Williams, IBM Research. So I saw in your related work you had the rump type approach where you would take the kernel TCP stack and run that in user space.
Yep.
So I see a big advantage of your work being that you're using the kernel TCP stack itself rather than a different implementation of it. Can you compare a little bit about whether saving the complexity of changing some of this, the two different, the data path and the control path versus just running the whole thing in the rump kind of style.
So the historical actors, there's a lot of work running like entire network stack in user space, but their primary goal has been the compatibility rather than performance. So I saw the paper, but they all demonstrate, say, one order of magnitude lower performance compared to the high performance, the user space TCP IP.
Do you know why they're having
the... So because they have to emulate everything, like, for example, like emulating to emulate software interrupt, they use pthread, for example. They use a lot of some of the kernel abstraction, et cetera. So I think that's why the running everything in user space makes things slow down.
Thank you.
Richard Clegg, Imperial College London. So I think in our project we faced very similar challenges. One of the early decisions we took was in that APOL thread, we thought we couldn't get the performance with the read and the write in the EPOL thread, so we spun them off to different threads. Did you consider that?
You mean that the...
So your first illustration was EPOL thread, read, do something, write.
Yeah.
And our very early design decision was that read and that write should be in different threads, because we couldn't get good performance.
Yeah, but basically that code pass runs on every thread. Every thread monitors a set of file descriptors and process them in that.
Okay, so you can get a bit of parallelism like that. Thank you.
Hi, so I didn't remember very clear, but I think the mostly the it's very slow for your socket API and the packet IO slow, since that there were some lock implementation on that.
So, locks.
Yeah, in the socket implementation, there are several locks. So, so it's very slow if you have a lot of socket and a lot of TCP.
So the lock starting matters when we have the lot of concurrency. But in this experiment, that part doesn't affect.
Yeah,
so it's affecting when we are testing with a multiple scalability test. We have to take a look at and how those things actually affect.
I just propose another mechanism. Maybe you can try that. You can like use SIOV to split your physical NIC into several virtual NIC, and your application just establish a lot of TCP connection in these several virtual NIC, and you can try. Maybe the performance is better.
In the notion of the dedicated NIC, we also assume SRIOV the device as well. So the only assumption is nobody uses that NIC, the only stack map application uses that. So it doesn't care whether it is a physical NIC or the SRIOV NIC.
I know. I understand. I mean, you can split one physical NIC into 100 virtual NIC establish one TCP connection in one virtual NIC. So you can get higher performance.
I'm not sure because we need a batching across multiple TCP connections. So if we bind one TCP connection to one NIC, we can't do batching across multiple TCP connections. So
I mean the traditional application maybe can get benefit from that. I mean,
of course,
so your stack map
to share the same physical NIC using SRV makes perfect sense. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Very good. So let's thank Michio again.
Thank you very much.